Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hellman, and I thank you very much for being on air. We have a wonderful guest that a friend mentioned this book. I checked out the website, and I immediately said I had to have this woman on. Margaret Levenstein is from www.renaissancesouls.com, life transition and career coach for a changing time. She is the author of The Renaissance Soul, Life Design for People Who Have Too Many Passions to Pick Just One. Are you a Renaissance Soul? Check out. She has a website quiz for you to check it out. She also has a phone number, which is 413-253-7693, and an email, which is margleben@getunstuck.com. Now, you actually have
to get unstuck, not the number.
Okay.
So people don't get confused.
That's fine, Margaret. How are you doing? And thank you so much for being on air this week. It was just like synchronicities that everything fell in part, you know, in place to have you on the show. So I really appreciate you being on.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. I'm absolutely delighted to be here because it's wonderful to let other Renaissance souls know that they are delightful, appreciated people and not being put down as dilettantes and dabblers and all that nonsense.
Now, do you feel that there is a little bit of an increase of people recognizing that they are more of a Renaissance soul, or that more people are kind of like dabbling in more things and not just focusing on one thing these days?
Okay, well, I definitely think there's more awareness, and I certainly hope so, because I've done my best with the book, and people like you who have the radio shows and the interview programs are doing their best to spread the word. So hopefully people who thought that there was something the wrong matter with them because they had too many interests to pick just one are realizing that they are simply a Renaissance soul. They're simply wired more like a Ben Franklin than they are like a Mozart. And I would beg to differ on you on whether people are dabbling, because I think most of the time we're accused of dabbling when in fact we're just outgrowing one interest and moving to another.
And I really think that's very true in many ways. I mean, I am a Renaissance soul, and I have always called myself a dabbler. And I will be one of the first people who says, I'll get interested in something and I'll get proficient in it. Sometimes I will even say I mastered it in some way. And then I say, okay, what's next? And I generally see things that are interrelated or connected to it. And it's like when I'm learning about something and then something will click in my mind, well, that's really interesting. And it's like a related subject. So I'll go off and do that.
Exactly.
And it really has expanded my experience with the overall ideas. I'm an artist full on. I dabble in all the arts and I love it. So before we get too wrapped up, what are some of the characteristics or what exactly is a Renaissance soul?
Well, that's a good place to start because some people may not have a clue what we're talking about. There are basically three key characteristics of Renaissance souls. The first one is that we prefer variety and combination over concentrating on just one thing. The second characteristic has two parts to it. The first is that unlike people who are wired more like Mozart and unlike academicians and so on, who like to narrow their choices, they like to get everything out of their way. You think about academia, you think about liberal arts, narrow it down to English, narrow it down to drama, narrow it down to Shakespeare, narrow it down to tragedy, narrow it down to Romeo and Juliet, narrow it down to dialogue. And finally, in the first act, there'll be a topic that will be unique and specific enough to be a PhD topic. And for people who are like that, they appreciate that they've gotten everything else out of the way. And God bless them. If Jonas Salk had not been willing to get everything out of the way and just focus on polio, a lot of people would have gotten a lot sicker. But that's not what a Renaissance soul does. What we do is we like to widen our options. We like to knock on a door, go through, find out who are the people, what are the issues, what are the conferences, what are the questions. And when we've learned enough about that, it either takes us into something else and we move on into something else, or we may at the same time be knocking on two or three other doors. And that's perfectly fine, too, because we love the learning curve. We love to be figuring things out more than we like to keep doing the same old, same old. Okay? And the other half of the second characteristic is something that I work with people who are across the whole spectrum, from Renaissance soul to pure Mozart types. And this characteristic, this aspect, second aspect of the second characteristic is something that applies to everybody, but I have found that it applies so much more to Renaissance souls. And that is that we really need to go with our energy flow. And let me give you an example that may make that clear quickly. Let's suppose I have two clients, insurance salesmen, and one of them is wired more like Mozart. He just has one thing on his mind, and that's being an insurance salesman. And so he may write down, you know, in his Palm Pilot or on his latest gadget that on Thursday morning, he plans to do cold calling. And I'm willing to bet you money that if I drop by unannounced Thursday morning at his office, he would be sitting there doing cold calls. Now, let's take a Renaissance soul person. She may also think she wants to do cold calling on Thursday morning. And if on Thursday morning that is the kind of energy that she has, she will be the world's best cold caller. But if she's in a different energy, and in one of her different energies, she may be cleaning the rug or writing a poem or walking the dog, anything but doing the cold calling. So that's the second characteristic. And the final characteristic, the third characteristic of Renaissance souls, is we have a completely different definition of success. And again, an easy way I'll give a couple of examples to make that more vivid. Let's imagine that we have a Mozart type who's developed a restaurant and they've got organic food and fair trade coffee and local art on the walls and everything's going perfect, the waitress outfits, the menus, the whole nine yards, and it's a fantastic success. What that person is going to do, if they're wired more on the Mozart end of the spectrum, is they are going to have another restaurant. They're going to expand. Perhaps they'll expand to another city and then to another one. They may even officially set up franchises, because somebody of that nature, when they find a good thing going, they ride it. Now, let's take the Renaissance soul. Same thing, wonderful restaurant, organic food, fair trade coffee, art on the walls. Got everything figured out. It's going great. What do? They sell it. They have figured it out, and they are bored. Been there, done that could be a phrase invented by the Renaissance soul.
And oh, yeah.
A really wonderful example is when I do large workshops, I ask people, how many people in this room have closet fulls or garage fulls of unfinished crafts projects?
My hands
and
up.
People just burst out laughing. And then I tell this story. Again, imagine we have our little Mozart kit. There are, I don't know if you remember, these potholder kits you can get like in the dollar store or so, and they've got four metal sides, and they come with some yarn, and you can do the yarn across and down to make yourself a little potholder. Okay, so let's imagine we've got our Mozart type kid, and he saved up his allowance, and he goes to the store, and he buys his potholder, and he comes home, gets his mom to set up the sides, and then he sits there very patiently and makes his potholder, and when he's done, he's pleased as punch, because he's got his potholder. Now we've got the Renaissance girl, and she goes to save up her allowance, and she goes to the store, and she gets the kit, and she brings it home, and she won't let her mother touch it because half the fun is figuring out how to set it up. And when she's got it set up, then she may do a quarter or maybe a half until she has a pattern that she likes and that she knows works, and then she'll stop. And mm-hmm. she will be just as tickled because she wasn't buying a potholder. She was buying the opportunity to try a new process. So she
it's
is,
okay, go on. I'm sorry.
Her mother may think she isn't finished. When she asks her mother for another kind of kid, her mother's going to may say, well, why are you trying to do glass? You haven't even finished your potholder. But she has finished her potholder. Mm-hmm. In Renaissance terms, once she's got it figured out, she's done and she's ready for something new. Those are the three characteristics.
Now, that's me, hands down.
All right.
No question.
Okay.
And,
I hope it's a lot of your listeners, too.
I really believe that. And it's very interesting because it's like so many people say, well, when are you going to finish the projects? And it's like,
right.
I meditate and they said, just enjoy the process and you get it done when you get it done.
And you may not get it done. Leonardo da Vinci, who's one of the epitome of Renaissance souls, mm-hmm. never finished the Last Supper. That painting is still defined as unfinished. Who cares?
It's interesting because I feel more pressure from the frustration of other people wanting me to
right.
finish it than from me wanting to actually get it done. To me, it's like
right.
you said. I it's like even today, laying out a poetry book. And it's like, I know I'm going to have a series of them, and I've got all the poetry done. And it's like, okay, that was nice. Let's move on to something else. And yet I know that I truly, for me, want to finish the process and hold the book and really get it completed. And that's just for me, which brings in, you know, the idea of really you need to understand if you are a Renaissance soul, is there anything else that you can really say that are key signs that you need to understand about yourself from those three characteristics of the Renaissance souls? Is there anything to say, this is what you need to realize, these are key signs that you are a Renaissance soul?
Well, you can. One key sign is that you hate choosing. That if somebody asks you to choose between something, that you freeze up. You just have no interest in choosing. For choosing feels like losing. And that's definitely one way to tell the Renaissance soul. Another way is that you have interest in lots of different things that people can't understand how you could find them even remotely connected. You know, what is it about you? Why would you be interested in the neurology of the brain and at the same time want to read the book about Darwin traveling around the world? So you can have many diverse interests. You get excited by many things at once. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's one. A second one, as I already mentioned, is the love of new challenges, and that once the challenges are mastered, you get bored. Another one is the fear of being trapped in the same career or activity for life. You know, I work with kids who are applying to college, and some of them
mm-hmm.
absolutely freeze because people say, well, in order to pick a college, what are you thinking of majoring in? And so maybe they come up with something, and the immediate next question is, and what do you plan to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if they pick something, they're supposed to stick with it for the rest of their life. And so they freeze. Another thing is that you, as we've just touched on, is you can have a quick and what seems to other people like unsatisfying flings with lots of different hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
And a fifth one is you can have a successful career. You can be at the top of some ladder and be bored out of your mind and want something else. Nobody can understand why you would want to leave your cushy position.
Now, the question that pops in my head is why did you decide, or what was it about yourself and your coaching career that made you, number one, to write this book or investigate exactly the Renaissance soul?
Okay, well, that's a great question. And essentially, as I said before, I work with clients across the spectrum. But when Mozart comes to visit me, he doesn't come to ask me what he should be when he grows up. He might want to know how much he should charge for a minuet or whether or not it makes sense for him to move to Vienna. But people who are wired, who've known since they were kids, you know, I've always wanted to be a doctor since I was four, they don't come for that kind of work. So I had a very, around the issue of how should I design my life, I had a high preponderance of people who were more on the Ben Franklin side of the continuum. And at first, I just began to notice that there were starting, things kept sort of cropping up. And so then I got to the point where I would say to somebody, would you mind if I'd ask you, could just try something on you? And they'd say, sure. And I'd run down the three characteristics. And I'd say, how did you know? That's me. And I've just been here 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so as that happened more and more, I began to realize, you know, I had to refine it and check it out and interview enough people. But I became very, very much convinced that the characteristics we've just gone through are valid definitions of what makes a Renaissance soul. And what made me want to be sure the book got out was I had a dear friend who was totally healthy in June on her birthday and was dead to colon cancer by the end of the summer. And she had been working on a nonfiction book on a completely different topic. And fortunately, her coworkers, she was close enough to being done that her coworkers could finish it for her. Well, the very day that I heard about her, Anita's death, I had a man sitting in the rocking chair here next to me in my office, and he was crying at the fact that he finally understood that there wasn't anything the matter with him. He was literally, he was in a three-piece suit, he had a Rolex watch, he was, you know, a successful businessman, and he was sitting there in tears, and it suddenly dawned on me, you know, if something happened to me tomorrow, I better get this down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the motivation to write the book.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, and it's very interesting. I've actually had dreams where I just get everything in my computer and somebody else gets it out.
Yes.
And in many ways, I'm okay with that because, like, when I'm writing it on, I have a typeset. I've got it pretty much ready to go. It's like, okay, I'm done. Somebody else
right.
can do the marketing and the rest of that stuff.
But
exactly. I understand
that.
And
that's
that.
Why many times Renaissance souls need to pair with non-Renaissance souls.
Right. Right. It really does
because, right.
make
because
them
we don't,
focus.
You know, we don't like the detailed work. We're
no.
the idea people.
Well, it's weird. I'm very good at giving detail ideas for other people, just
mm-hmm.
not for myself.
But we don't want to actually do it. We'd get bored.
No, we do. We do. And it's the interesting lessons. Now, something that I just mentioned up was I'm making a choice just to write it down. And I work on like multitasking at the same time. I'll be working on three different projects at the same time.
Of course.
So what's the difference between choosing and focusing?
Okay. Good question. For Renaissance souls, I said before, we hate choosing. For us,
mm-hmm.
choosing, immediately we feel like we're losing. We immediately think of all the things we're giving up. And it just puts us in scarcity thinking. If, on the other hand, we go to focusing is something that can actually help us bring something to fruition. It can feed us. Let me use an example. Do you like ice cream?
Love it.
Okay, so let's imagine that I sent you to one of those fancy ice cream stores. There's tons of different kinds of ice cream. And I told you you had to go into that store and you had to pick one flavor of ice cream, and that was the only flavor you were ever going to eat for the rest of your life, and it couldn't be chocolate or coffee. You would probably stand in their store and it would close around you, and you would have been so paralyzed you wouldn't even have had any ice cream. Does that make sense to you, the thought of having to eat just one ice cream and give up everything else? Is
this yes.
a horrible thought? Okay, now let's imagine that I sent you to that same ice cream store, and I said, Jen, this time you have to go in and you have to take into account all the regular ice creams and all the soft-serve ice creams and all the non-fat yogurts and all the sugar-free yogurts and all the Italian ices and all the sorbets and all the sherbets, and there are 100 flavors up there on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
That can be equally paralyzing. Oh, I think I really like raspberry. Oh, but look over here, they've got peanut brittle.
Yeah.
Oh, look over here, they've got cookie dough. Oh, my goodness, I couldn't possibly live without strawberry. Oh, my God, I can't live without. Yeah, and so we can be equally paralyzed by too many choices. Now let's say that I sent you to that ice cream store, and I said, Jen, go to the ice cream store and pick out a four-flavor sampler I know that that's what you're going to eat for today. But then when you come another time, you can change one of the flavors or three of them, or you can keep one forever and keep changing the others, whatever. How would that feel to you if I sent you to get a four-flavor sampler?
That would be better.
That would be better. When I say that in large groups, often I can hear people go, "Huh, I could do that."
Right.
That's all right. If I can, you know, I can pick four. And that's what, when I talk in the book about focal points, if you pick three or four focal points and are able to actually sit there, like if you had a four-flavor sampler, you wouldn't run up to the counter every 30 seconds to get a new flavor. Mm-hmm. You would sit there and you would eat those four flavors. You would actually get some nourishment.
Well, it's like me doing three. I'm sorry?
I didn't hear the last thing you said. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm saying that's like me doing three projects at one time.
Right. Three projects at one time makes sense. That's, if you focus in on three things, you will actually be able to knock on those doors, go in, find out what the big issues are, what the questions are, you know, what's needed, what's missing, and you will mm-hmm. actually feel nourished. That's why focusing on your four-flavor sampler is brings out our positive. We're getting, we're receiving, we're learning. Choosing, we immediately go, "Oh my God, what am I being denied?"
Right.
So that's the pivotal difference.
Now, with the Renaissance, as you said, pick like four things that you need to focus on. Is there any other tips on actually once you are pick those four focus points, is there anything else to really help people
keep the
focus going?
I go in great detail in the book about the steps that make it easier for us to actually follow through, because we it's very, very easy for us to get distracted. So using an example from my own life, when I was writing my book, my study is downstairs, my computer's downstairs. Now you picture me at the kitchen sink, and I want to be work. I've decided that I want to be writing on such and such of a chapter that morning. And as I leave the kitchen sink, I notice that there's a letter that should be out in the mailbox. So I take the letter out to the mailbox, and then I notice that the plants really need watering. So then I water the plants, and as I come in, notice that the indoor plants also could use some water. So then I'm watering the indoor plants, and as you can see, but I barely get to my desk. So one of the things that I strongly recommend is knowing, and I did this myself, and I said it out loud for over a year. I literally said it out loud, is the no, no, no rule. When I would look at that bill, I would say, no, no, no. And what I used to help me think that way was I would picture, if you picture yourself in a office place, you know, say you're working for a company, and you're walking down the hall from your office to drop something off to somebody else's office, and you suddenly think about that envelope that you left on the counter at home, you don't walk out of your office and go home and mail the letter. It may suddenly occur to you that your plant, you didn't water the plants this morning, but you don't go home and water them. They're just going to have to survive. So if you wouldn't steal that time from a boss, from somebody else's work, why would you steal it from your own? And that's the importance of really valuing the no, no, no rule. And to go along with that is the idea of the location, location, location. It's really hard for a Renaissance soul who thinks she wants to read up on the new information about the brain to sit in her living room couch and read, because she's going to notice that over there, oh, my God, that's right. She wanted to get that red paint taken back to the store. It was the wrong color. And, oh, the same kinds of distractions. When I was trying to do research for my book, I went to somebody else's house who was away at work. It would have been rude of me to do her dishes because it would have implied that I thought she should have done them. It wouldn't have been appropriate for me to listen on her answering machine, you know, just in case it was an important call. All those things that can distract us. If you're in a location, now don't go to the library. Libraries are like candy stores for Renaissance souls. Everything in the library just about can interest us. but to try and go to a place that's not particularly interesting. So that's one kind of answer to your question. Then there's a completely different kind of answer, and that is that, as I talked about before, that insurance salesman who was going to pin himself down to do cold calling, I said it really depends on our energy. What I help people do is figure out how many hours in their current life, given what their responsibilities are, how many hours do they have to spend on their focal points. And once we figure that out, we block out those hours in their whatever planner type planner they use, but we don't label them. We just label them focal point time. And when the time comes, the person decides which of their four flavors they're in the mood to work on.
Wonderful. Those are really good things to help the Renaissance person to really focus more on getting things accomplished. My deal is, it's like once I get something done, I don't savor the success. Is that an important thing to say, wow, I really did it. Here it is. It's complete. I followed through. I have it completely done. Is that something that's really important for the Renaissance soul to do? Because generally it's like, okay, that's done. What's next?
Okay, now when you say generally we're done, what's next? Are you unhappy when you're feeling that way? Do you feel that you haven't given yourself credit, or are you just ready to move on?
I'm really ready to move on.
Then it's fine. And you don't even need to have finished by somebody else's definition as long as you finish the potholder by yours.
Right. But I know
you've
so many people
it,
that...
You've mastered it, done it. Now, of course, when my book came out, I'm not going to lie and say I wasn't thrilled to pieces that, you know, I had finished the book and managed to get it published. But if you're doing a project and you've gotten as far as you want with it and you don't feel that you're being cheated out of recognition, then you don't need any more recognition. If you feel that you're missing it, then yes, you have to stop and breathe and say, look, here's another thing I did as far as I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And pat yourself on the back.
So that it's interesting to me to really see this information on your website, which again is awesome. It is amazing the amount of information that really you have available, and the quiz is a lot of fun.
Okay, let me just make one point about the website that I've learned the hard way. When I first went to pick a domain name, the domain name Renaissance Soul was held by some English singer who had some song by that name. So if somebody's entering, Googling, they have to be sure to Google Renaissance Souls with an S, or they won't get to the website.
Sounds good. Thank you for making sure people do that. Now, in your book, you do cover a lot of things. Have you ever met someone that was just so scattered that you weren't able to help them?
Yes,
really?
And there's several people that can be the case for. One type of person is somebody who has, and I really want to clarify that these things are not synonymous, and we can talk about it a little bit more because there's so much confusion, but there are some people who do have ADD, and until they get medication, their body is fighting them. Now, people tend to say to Renaissance Souls, oh, you've got so many interests, you're bouncing all over the map, you must be ADD. There's a continuum from Mozart to Ben Franklin. Some people are more one than the other. The same is true. There's a continuum of people who don't have ADD to people who do. They are two separate continuums. They are no more related than who has brown hair. If the first book that came out about the sort of the original Bible on ADD, it wasn't even called ADHD at the time, was called Driven to Distraction. It's written by two psychologists who'd had ADD themselves. There's a whole paragraph in that book explaining why Mozart had ADD. So having one interest doesn't protect you from having ADD. Having lots of interests doesn't mean you have ADD. They're two separate things. But if somebody does have ADD, then until they've addressed that issue, they may not be able to take full advantage of some of the things we've talked about today. There are also people who, for some reason or other, are trying to sabotage themselves. And I do have a section in my book for people who, after they've tried all the different things and types of exercises and so on, still feel stuck. I have a whole section on what some of the possible things that might be getting in their way. And then I have a certain type of client that I run to every now and then who needs to prove that their condition is hopeless. So they go from one therapist to one career counselor to one psychologist and so on, and they yes but you, because the whole, what they need is to be know that there's, that they can't be fixed, quote unquote.
Right.
But most Renaissance souls, once they understand that they are a Renaissance soul and not a dabbler and not a dilettante and not a jack-of-all-trades, master of none, start and they take the time to actually concentrate on the tools, use the book and so on, they blossom. It's lovely.
And it really is, really does make a difference when you have the tools that are in your book to help people who are very scattered and very easily distracted to number one, claim their power as a Renaissance soul and to understand that they're not, you know, something out of control. It's just something that they need to understand and actually claim and embrace and
exactly.
Just settle down.
And one piece of that is that oftentimes Renaissance souls are also multi-talented. And we have many interests, and we're also pretty good at quite a few things. So one of the tools that I have in the book is the whole idea of intentions. And the intentions are things that help us over the parts we're bad at so that we don't give up. I'll explain it with an example. One of the intentions I used for myself when I was writing my book was I had to intend to be thick-skinned enough to survive all kinds of rejection because I'm a thin-skinned person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I didn't do the part of the exercise about the intention and then develop the markers that would let me know that I really was developing being thick-skinned, I could easily have stopped the book as soon as the first rejection came along and switched to something else because there's a million something else's I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have been deprived of the satisfaction of having this interview with you because the book wouldn't have been done. So there's tricks that help us that we might not even think about because we sometimes limit ourselves by not understanding why we are suddenly switching to something else.
Right. One thing that I have done that used to work all the time and just recently doesn't work at all is due dates. By this date, I will have this done. And that date will come and I say, wow, oh, well. And it's like I don't punish myself for not doing it, but I do recognize that I missed an opportunity. And is there anything that you can suggest for someone who has that kind of issue? It's like I worked on it and stuff, but it just didn't happen.
All right. You and I would probably have to have more than a few minutes for me to figure out
okay.
Particular why for you. But one thing that is very important in the book, when I talk about focal points, one of the first things I have people do is figure out realistically in the real world with their current situation, be it children, be it a job that demands a lot, be it an elderly mother, whatever their current, how much time realistically do they have for their four focal points? Or perhaps they need to only have three for a while. Or if they are realistic about how much time they have, then they're not going to set a date that they feel like they failed. Because frequently when that happens, it's because you're trying to do so many different things, and this particular thing with this particular due date ended up not getting the attention that it deserved. Because mm-hmm. you've been trying to eat 100 flavors of ice cream.
That in my situation though is like I start a project And then it keeps expanding. Oh, I can do this. Oh, yeah, I can add this. And then I can go in this direction. And then I can do in this direction. And it gets a little overwhelmed. I will say I overwhelm myself because there's so many possibilities and so many ideas that all work so well.
Okay. One of the things that I recommend to anybody who is doing focal point work or whatever you'd like to call it, let's say you have four focal points. And you either have four folders on your computer or let's use the example of a literal notebook. If you have a literal notebook and you have four focal points, you have a section for each focal point, and then I say you have to have a fifth section for all the new ideas that come along while you're working on your focal points. All the ice cream flavors that you might want to try after you finish this particular sampler. And that way, you have a good idea, you write it down. You don't have to give it up just because you aren't pursuing it at that moment. Mm-hmm. Another thing that can happen is if you decide that you are really going wider with one than you had expected, then you go back and you look at your focal point list and you say, okay, maybe I'm going to do this other one next summer. Maybe I'm going to work seasonally because I really do want to pursue this now. Another thing, if it's huge, then there's also what I refer to as an umbrella focal point. Now, when I was an innkeeper, I managed to be an innkeeper for 10 years, which for a Renaissance soul sounds like maybe I'm not really a Renaissance soul. But the reason I could do that was an innkeeper is an interior decorator, a finance person, a storyteller, right, a breakfast chef, a gardener, a publicist, and so on. Well, then when I had that umbrella, I pursued that umbrella in all those different directions, and I didn't try and have. I had my focal points under the umbrella. I didn't try and have three umbrellas.
Wonderful. Good suggestions. And it's like even my business, I have an umbrella, and I have actually have five different businesses under one umbrella. And I don't always work on all of them, but they're all interrelated. Mm-hmm. So it is amazing that I see myself when I do get overwhelmed. It's like, all right, I'm stepping back, need to just kind of chill for a second and then regroup myself and say, okay, which do I need to really focus on first and see the interconnection of how the patterns and the details. I definitely, when I get a project, I tend to do outlines and get down the idea. And then go back and do the steps. If I then go and even refine it even deeper to get the details within each section even more, it tends to help me if I just keep on track and say, okay, there's my outline.
Exactly. And in the book, I happen to call those things markers for the intentions, but no two Renaissance souls are going to do this exactly the same, which I stress in the book. I just, you know, I give ideas, I give suggestions, but we love to invent things. We love to figure out things. So each person is going to do it in the way that works best for them. But that's exactly the right idea. You don't try and do the 100 flavors at once. So if you start feeling overwhelmed, you need to step back. You need to see what has taken you away. Because when you're frustrated like that, you are not getting any nourishment. You're just beating yourself up.
So with that in mind, let's talk about the practical realities of like career and pursuing them. I mean, a lot of these things that we have multi-interest in, we can be getting paid for. But do you have any suggestions that
did you say that you could or you could not? I didn't catch.
Could.
Okay. So now what is your question? Now that I heard the question, heard what you said.
Okay, so basically, what I'm asking is, do you have any tips to really get paid for passion, for your passions, for all the different areas? Is it just depend on the different careers, or is it really understanding and doing a little research on that passion that you have to see what is available to get paid?
Both. And the thing is, I also want to go back to harping on Renaissance souls, we make great entrepreneurs because entrepreneurs wear many hats. just the way I was describing, when I worked for myself as an innkeeper, I had to wear many hats. Mm-hmm. So we're very good at it. But we need, in most cases, if we're really going to get somewhere, it's what I said before, we need to partner with a detail person. And that way, the wonderful things you've created will actually get mailed out in a timely fashion to the person who ordered it. Or you won't miss a big craft show because you didn't look at your calendar and realize it was next week. It frequently works for the creative person, the idea person, who's also trying to find a way to get paid to cooperate with somebody else. It can be a barter situation. You know, you may help them develop their business because they may need an idea person. They may be stuck in a rut. But that's something that can really help move you forward.
Now, if they're not lucky enough to have that partner, is it just really trial and error and finding what works and just doing your best to choose to focus on certain aspects to follow through?
Well, without knowing the type of field that the person's referring to, I mean, there are standard things that you would, if you're trying to create a business, that it makes sense to find out, such as whether there are 10 zillion others on the same block doing the same thing, whether the age group that you think would want your product is moving into something else now, whether it's something that can be produced far less expensively abroad, so you may do a beautiful job, but people can't afford to buy it at a price that will give you a business, give you an income. There are one of the things that happens on the internet, where there are a lot of ways to make money, you know, to build one idea onto another, is that the first people who do it, the first person who thought about sending out an e-newsletter, got incredible success from it. On down the road, everybody was sending out an e-newsletter, and pretty soon nobody was reading any of them.
Right.
Okay, the first person who thought of a blog, now there's a zillion, so if you're doing something along those lines, you also have to be aware that you need to stay in tune with what's coming ahead, as opposed to always being the person falling behind. But Renaissance folks, we have the kind of imaginations that we're often the person that's starting the thing.
Yes, we're generally a little bit ahead of our times, aren't we?
Yes.
Another thing that you mentioned, which is really a great subject, is any suggestions for parents who have children that they're realizing are Renaissance souls to help them focus, kind of hone in what they're doing without really killing their creativity.
Okay, well, the first thing I found very interesting was that one of the largest markets for my book was Renaissance souls buying it for their parents so that their parents would understand them. Because they're really, if you happen to have parents who are Mozarts and you turn up a Ben Franklin, the parent can be very confused. Which is why I do have a whole listing on the website about different ideas. But just for an example, if you have a kid you think is a Renaissance soul, if you go to the theater, instead of just assuming that you're going to sit next to your kid in the theater and they're going to watch, you might also really see if you can't figure out a way for them to talk to the light guy and get to go up there and look at the lights or to go backstage and look at the scenery people. Because you want to feed the fact that there are lots of possible things that he's interested in or that he might or she might grab onto. So that's one point. The other thing is to, as much as possible, never put things in the singular. One of the hardest things that happen is that in the English language, the question, what do you want to be when you grow up, suddenly began to assume that it only had one answer. I'm walking down the street of Hope, Arkansas, and I get a bolt of lightning on my head, and it says, I want to be president, and I'm Bill Clinton, and I know what I want to be when I grow up.
Right.
So I encourage parents to often say, what are some of the things that you might be interested in? Or, when we go to the library, let's look at this section, but what other sections would you like to look at?
Yeah.
Or we have Saturday available to us because of such and such, so you and I are going to have the whole day together. And you say you want to go look at a construction site, so we'll go watch the big trucks. And then would you like to go and see the Butterfly Museum, or would you like to go and make pottery in the pottery store, or would you like to go in the woods and see if we can find a treasure? You know, and which would you like to do first, which would you like to do second, as opposed to what one thing do you want to do today?
Excellent suggestions. I was kind of blessed. My mom was a special ed teacher, so she and both my parents would always say, well, you have an interest in that. Why don't you go to the dictionary or the encyclopedia and look that up?
Excellent. And it sounds like they were comfortable with you having more than one interest.
Yeah, they really – well, my mom is an avid reader, so it really – though she really, for the most part, sticks with mysteries or thrillers, she understands – and being a teacher to expand your knowledge is fantastic. So they definitely were comfortable with the fact that I explored a lot of different ideas.
Great. Well, you are lucky. You are blessed.
Very much so.
Thank your parents.
Yes, I do quite often, actually.
Good. Good.
The other thing I wanted to mention is tell us a little bit more about your coaching practice.
Okay, in terms of what? What would you like to know?
Exactly how you basically, you said that you do pretty much anybody with their career to help them figure out the best track to keep them on track, correct?
Well, you know, I'm a Renaissance soul. And when I started coaching, there was nobody heard. The only people who had coaches were athletes and opera singers.
Right.
The whole idea of life coaching hadn't even entered the mainstream at that point at all. So knowing that I liked all different kinds of problems, what did I call my business? Alternative approaches. I didn't say alternative approaches to what. And I have done everything from being the small business, resident small business person for Staples to helping a woman get used to her husband who just retired and he'd been used to running a whole company. And now suddenly he was trying to run her kitchen, to helping a couple decide whether or not they're children, to helping people figure out what they want to be when they grow up, which is where the Renaissance Soul piece came in, to helping people figure out ways to get their business going. You know they love pottery. They know they've got beautiful pottery, but they just don't know how to get it out there, or they don't know how to – they've graduated from massage school, but they don't have any idea because they aren't entrepreneurs.
Right.
And so – I really, one of the things I enjoy and the reason I can have done this for so long is because I may have three sessions in a row that none of them look like the other ones. I've also done a lot of speaking, you know, I've done writing, so I have a variety of things that come under this umbrella.
You do workshops, correct?
I did. I unfortunately now have health limitations, and so I'm not doing them anymore. But I am working with people by phone all over the world, actually. So if somebody wanted to work with me, they would need to do it by phone. Or if they lived in Massachusetts, obviously they could consider doing it in person. But right now, I'm not doing. I'm not giving workshops.
Okay. So there's a. Like I said, the website is got so many. You've got links to some of your articles that is just wonderful and really can help people. You do have teleclasses, or is that on hold as well?
That's on hold as well. But the one thing I do have, which I probably should mention, because now that with my health issues, you know, there's so many Renaissance souls out there. There are more than I can handle. And so I developed a 9-CD set for coaches on how to coach Renaissance souls, because a lot of people go into coaching because they are Renaissance souls, because they like figuring out problems, they like working with a variety of people. So That's available on the website, and it makes a wonderful niche. You know, if somebody's a Renaissance soul already, they know how to empathize, but it tells you exactly how to be, what kinds of questions to ask and what things to avoid so that you can really help a Renaissance soul, even if you aren't one. You know, I mean, Renaissance souls show up at every coach's doorstep because there aren't enough coaches labeled Renaissance soul, and the Renaissance soul may not even know they're a Renaissance soul.
Right.
So if somebody's in the coaching field, I'm not doing the classes anymore, but there is that set of coaching CDs that's available that can give them that kind of information.
So with this, so it, after they do the nine CDs, is it kind of like a nation, or they just have the information so they can go out and do it?
Is what was the first thing you said? Is it a what?
Some kind of certification.
Oh, certification. I'm sorry. Well, what I offer a half-hour free session along with those CDs. And frequently, if somebody actually says, you know, in the course of our talk that they really want to go like this, then very frequently I'll say, well, let's have have a couple more sessions so that I can really be sure that they understand and they don't suddenly assume that somebody's being stupid because they didn't finish their potholder. You know,
right.
Take a simple example. And then I say, you can tell anybody that you've worked with me and that you've gone through, have my CD set, and please go out and advertise yourself as a Renaissance soul coach, because we need them.
We definitely do, and I am seeing so many people that have come on the show even, and they're Renaissance souls. I mean, they're dabbling in, well, they're working in a lot of different areas.
That's the word you got to watch out for. They're not dabbling.
But to me, I don't take it as a negative. I see them working.
But if you were coaching somebody and somebody had been called a dabbler since they were a kid, and when are you going to get serious and when are you going to figure out, then using that word can make them feel that you are judging them. I know that you're not judging them. But that's
because I use the word for myself.
Yep, that, which is fine because you understand it as a positive word. You don't knock yourself.
No, I don't knock myself at all for doing it.
Right.
So is there anything upcoming that you would like people to know about you, or do you want them to focus on going, getting the book and doing the work if they need additional coaching to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I've really learned for some people, once they read the first part of the book and really get clear that they are a Renaissance soul and there's nothing wrong with them, they really appreciate having the accountability of working with somebody through the different exercises that they actually, or through the different parts of the process. And so I'm delighted to coach them as much as they need. And I am not one of these coaches where you sign up for a whole package deal. Some people, I just have one session. The sessions are an hour and a half long, so frequently we'll get the issue resolved in one session. Other people like to have periodic half-hour check-ins. You know, I custom design each thing, but I really, the main thing I'm trying to do for people now is the coaching so that they can move forward. And if somebody is thinking of being a coach or is a coach, then that's why I've provided the CDs.
And it makes it easier for you not to have to repeat the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Right.
Having
the
CDs.
I don't mind doing that.
But again, we are coming to the end of the program, and I do want to thank you, Margaret, for being on the show and getting the book together. It really was kind of made me feel like, I haven't been crazy for all these years, and I have been on track. I've called myself being a little bit of the Renaissance, being the artist that was one of my favorite periods in the art, and I had a really strong connection with it. Now I understand a little bit why that word resonated with me so strongly. So if you would like to get in touch with Margaret, again, it's 2TOGetUnstuck.com. And if you do want to go to Renaissance Souls, plural, .com, you can get more information also on the book. The book is available.
Both of those things will take you to the same website.
and get in touch with Margaret and look at some of the wonderful downloadable questions and all kinds of information. There's information for different kind of coaches and advisors and counselors, and even for some managers and supervisors in other kind of businesses to give the very best support for their employees, which is, that's got to be really a popular area these days. 'Cause if the manager really wants to help their employees, that would be a wonderful one to look at for sure. So I thank you again, Margaret.
Let's just give my phone number out one more time, since that's the easiest way to reach me. And it's 413-253-7693. 413-253-7693.
Excellent. Again, thank you very much. It's awesome. It really, it's information that needs to get out there. It's been out there, and it just needs to be a little bit more expanded.
Right. And if it's people don't have the money to buy it, it's in getting it from the library.
Yes.
Get your hands on it.
It's definitely well worth it. So with that, this is Jennifer Hellman saying, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and information. Until next time, many blessings and good night.